Thanks for tuning into KKFI. Well, folks, the future's here. Simply tell your smart speaker, play KKFI. If you haven't already, give it a shot. KKFI, wherever you are.
90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and guest, and do not necessarily reflect those of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Mid-Coast Radio Project, its board, staff, and volunteers.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today we have some very good guests in our studio that are going to tell us a lot of different things about expungement, but also for those who may have had marijuana-related situations. So we have, from UMKC Law School, we have Dean Ellen Sunday, if I correct. Sune. And then we have her, what's your name, ma'am? I know, what's your position? Go ahead.
Truman Fellow at UMKC School of Law's Clear My Record Project and Expungement Clinic.
And you are Sydney Ragsdale.
That's right. Yes,
So Dr. Sunni, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Are you originally from Kansas City metropolitan area?
Nope. I'm originally from the Bronx, New York. Grew up in New York City and went to college at the City College of New York. Then went to law school in Boston and stayed in Boston for a while, clerked for the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, then went back to my law school to run their writing program, and I worked with an appellate lawyer. And then I wanted to do actual law school teaching after running their writing program and being an assistant dean. And so I accepted a job here at UMKC Law School because I really thought the law school was ahead of its time in the way it worked, and spent almost 40 years teaching mostly in the criminal law and procedure area, and I created lots of programs. I was part of the group that created the Midwest Innocence Project, created the Capital Punishment Resource Center, Kansas City Youth Court, and I always was able to set up programs, but never had the opportunity to really do the direct service to people. And I committed myself, when I retired, I was going to do some direct service. So now I volunteer running the expungement clinic, which I created, and I'm co-director of the Clear My Record Project, and we do help people who can't afford lawyers get expungements, and we do policy work. We worked on the bill that got vetoed by the governor, but actually got through the legislature, that would have made expungement easier for the people who need it most, who have records that are not like the records that the people who my private client friends serve, because of over-criminalization, over-policing, and all of that. And so it's tough work, but it is incredibly rewarding.
And you left out one thing, that you graduated magna cum laude from both your undergraduate and from law school.
Yeah, that is true. But I like to think about what I've done in the real world for people more than I do about grades.
And Sydney, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, and how did you get to be a Truman Scholar and end up working with the Expungement Project?
I went to UMKC School of Law for law school, and one of the main reasons I went there and was because of Professor Sean O'Brien and the work he does for wrongful convictions and the death penalty work he does, fighting against our state killing its own people to teach people not to kill. I worked under him throughout law school, and then this job came about, and Dean Suny reached out to me. And at the time, I didn't realize how many similarities there were between expungement and wrongful conviction cases. But there's so many similarities. It's instead of somebody wrongly being trapped in a prison, people are wrongly trapped in poverty, and removing that trap for them is incredibly rewarding, and they're so deserving of it. That's how I got involved and why I'm involved.
So, Dean Suny, UMKC operates a legal clinic. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the legal clinic?
So, UMKC has a number of legal clinics. We're one of them. And the idea of legal clinics is that there are needs out there in the community for lawyers and people to have the assistance of lawyers, and lots of people who can't afford lawyers, and the existing services are not sufficient. In addition, students need to learn hands-on. They need to be able to integrate all the theory and policy and so on that they learn, and law, that they learn in classes, into the real world. And so law clinics allow that to happen. So we have small classes. We teach at the beginning, and go over things, but it's very hands-on. We demonstrate from real cases and so on. And by the third or fourth week, the students have researched the background on a case. We discuss cultural competence and client-centered interviewing, and then we get them on the phone. They begin to call people who applied, with having done background on that person, and reading their intake, having a pretty good idea of where we are. And of course, we're supervising them throughout the whole time. And the students do the bulk of the work on these cases. We, of course, read everything because we're the lawyers who our name is on there, as well as the student, if they're a Rule 13 certified student, which is the student practice rule that the Missouri Supreme Court has that allows them, for example, to do the hearings and appear in court for their client. But it serves the community, and as we've identified, there's a big need, but it also is great education for the students.
Yeah.
Sydney, is there any cost for people to come to the clinic? Go ahead.
We do not charge anything for our services. We represent individuals who cannot afford a lawyer. There are fees associated with filing for expungement. They recently went down $250. So the average fee for an expungement used to be around $450. Now it's around $200. And there is a fee waiver that individuals can apply for if they qualify by the court's standards of being unable to pay. Those standards are really, really hard to meet. And there is a big, giant gap of people who don't meet those standards but cannot afford a lawyer, which costs around $2,000. And so we will represent people who don't meet the court standards of not being able to pay but cannot afford a lawyer. And in those cases, they do have to pay the court filing fees of around $200, but our services are completely free of charge.
So, Sydney, what hours are the legal clinic open and how many days per week?
We're open every day. We might not answer the phone all the time. We're in and out of the office, going to hearings, traveling. But we always get back to people, and our website is always available. And we are there Monday through Friday, usually about 10 to 6.
Do you offer walk-in hours, or do you really need to make an appointment?
At this point, yes, we do recommend making an appointment. We are discussing possibly opening our doors to have walk-ins, but we're not at that point currently.
And what we do is, if someone calls us, you know, or approaches us in some way, because we're at various events and things where we can talk to people, we send them to our website and recommend that they fill out the intake form, because then we have information from them that helps us do some background. And then before we actually talk to them, we're able to have some idea of whether they are expungible or not. Because unfortunately, a lot of the people who don't know much about expungement other than that it exists and it can help them, we try to educate with our website and so on, but a lot of people, you know, they want to talk to somebody. So if they fill out this form, we can have the most intelligent conversation with them, and they know where they stand fairly quickly.
And I know you talked about, I met you, it was back in June. It was at an event.
Right.
It was over at Palestine. They were doing the housing, and
right.
People don't understand how this expungement process is a game changer, because a lot of people are homeless or have difficulty finding a home, because in many cases, landlords won't rent to someone, especially if you've got a drug conviction. And, you know, they don't understand that it may have been 15 years ago and you were a minor, but that conviction is going to basically essentially follow you for the rest of your life and keep you, it's going to close a lot of doors for you. We used to have the question box for the city. You know, we took the question off, but there's still a situation where they're going to ask you, do you have, you know, if you make it through all the interviews, there's still a point where they're going to ask you, do you have a criminal history? Because people that work with the city have to be bonded, different things, and it's going to be there. So that's why this project is so great. So one question, Dean Suni. So if someone has a case and they're trying to research it, can they come to the law library to kind of, you know, find out information and learn about the case and the charges they may be facing and things like that?
Well, yes and no. So the law library is open to the public. Unfortunately, they can't get a whole lot of help there from librarians, because there's a state law that prohibits them giving legal advice to people. If someone comes in and wants to talk to us, we'll talk to them. But what we need to research is less the law, because for most things, we know the law, but we need to research their records, because we've represented people who have convictions from 3 years ago to people who have convictions in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. I mean, it's across the board. And so many of these people no longer have any records. They have a rough idea of what they were convicted of and so on. But we really need a lot more information. And it's a whole lot easier for us and our students to find that information initially than it is for most individuals.
And Dean Suni said they might not have records, but that doesn't mean they don't have a record.
Right.
So it's interesting because, yeah, there are cases that are so old that they don't appear in any of our sources, but they will appear in a state background check, and they will prevent that individual from accessing all sorts of opportunities, jobs, and housing.
Wow. So the paperwork may be there, but the long arm of the law is still affecting them in some ways, mm-hmm. and going from there. So, Sydney, how does having a conviction on your record impact a person other than jobs and housing?
Oh, I think there are tens of thousands of collateral consequences, and I mean, so many that we probably don't even know about. We're trying to learn as many of them as we can, but we hear of new ones all the time. One example is Canada. People can't go to Canada. Even if you get an expungement, Canada makes you go through their own process. They don't recognize U.S. expungements, but they recognize U.S. convictions. A lot of other countries you can't travel to. Individuals can't go on field trips with their children. I mean, all sorts of things. It's so limiting from angles you would never even really think of.
So it impacts more than just housing, but it impacts also your ability to get a job. So you're almost in a situation where you served your time, came out, yeah. But now you can't turn around and get a clean, fresh start because you're in a situation where you did, but you're still a criminal.
Yeah, and that wasn't part of the deal when they pled to, you know, that crime, that they pled and were sentenced to supervision or incarceration. The lifelong punishment of having a record and not being able to access certain things was not part of the deal, yet it happens, and it is a punishment that people endure.
Can I add one, sure. one further thing? So take housing. It doesn't only hurt the person who has the criminal record. It hurts their whole family. So we've had several people who've said they need to find a place to move so that their kids can go to a school that they really want them to go to. I mean, there's all, it affects the individual, their families, their communities, because you have a working population that can't work. And it hurts the economy of the country. There's estimates that the GED of the United States is hurt between, I believe it's 69 and 80 some billion, some crazy number. That, you have it on the sheet, I think. Mm-hmm. Because these people are not allowed to have jobs. They that pay, you know, more than minimum wage, even though many of them have skills that would allow them to do the work, or are so willing to get training and education to be able to get good jobs. And so it especially hurts their communities, but it hurts all of us.
And what she's talking about, studies estimate the records that having a criminal record may prevent one-third of working-age males from contributing to the formal economy, leading to substantial lost income and tax revenue. This is folks underemployment. Underemployment of formerly incarcerated job seekers is estimated to cost the U.S. economy $78 to $87 billion annually. Mm-hmm. And here's another fun fact for you, and it's a sad fact. One in three Americans have some type of criminal records. It's estimated that 1.8 million Missourians have a criminal record, and 1.1 million of these criminal records are criminal convictions. Folks, Missouri has a population of 6,186,000 people, so almost 30% of Missourians have a criminal record. Break it down a different way. If you walk down the street and you count 10 people, three of those 10 people are going to have a criminal record.
Well, and I have a criminal record because Missouri punishes traffic as misdemeanor. So for a long time I had a lead foot, and I was going like 15 over on the highway, got pulled over, and rather, you know, I believe, doesn't matter who you are, you should be governed by the same laws that everybody else. And so while I probably could have made some phone calls to people and, you know, gotten my ticket reduced, I didn't want to do that. So I paid the fine. I even didn't realize that I now have a misdemeanor and it's on CaseNet. Okay? Now, it doesn't hurt me because it's traffic, okay? But even at the misdemeanor levels, people have minor stealing. You know, well, minor, sometimes when they were a minor, those they don't usually get a record for, but stealing in minor amounts. And they are guilty of a misdemeanor, they plead guilty, and they don't think it's going to hurt them forever. But stealing and drugs are two things, regardless of whether they're a felony or a misdemeanor or a local ordinance. When stealing or drugs are on your record, you are a marked person, and getting all kinds of jobs, housing, and other things becomes very, very difficult. And that, you know, so many of the people might have for smoking marijuana, or, you know, what we think of as minor, but they still can have a tremendous impact. And so can arrests that don't even lead to a conviction. And we are just starting to do some expungements of those.
And Dean Sunny, a lot of people run into have mental health concerns. Oh. They may be taking medication. They were smoking marijuana before it was even legal because it calmed them down. How does that, and then the court does the court recognize those mental health conditions? The person was, they may not like the medication because of the side effects, but they found something that kept them out of trouble. But does the court recognize those type of things? Because a lot of people that have mental health conditions are definitely marijuana smokers.
Right. It depends. And of course, now with marijuana, the landscape has changed some. And Sydney is our expert on marijuana, and I'll let her talk about that. But in general, we're dealing with people who got convictions, not mostly in the last 10 years. They're mostly before that, the people that we have tended to see. And the world has changed a lot in terms of recognizing that mental health conditions are much more common and prevalent than we thought, and that they have tremendous impacts on everyday people. And things happen. Unfortunately, people with a record, they can't afford some of the medication, right? So they're taking less of their medication, or they may be off their medication, and the mental health stuff gets them, all right? And in the past, that was not gonna help them much. In fact, I think having a mental health condition, if it was disclosed in some way, can hurt somebody more than it helped them, because it made people more afraid of what they might do. So I would say that the courts in most cases were not very lenient in those days. Today we have a diversion mental health court, so that people who they, you know, the prosecutors think can not be prosecuted and go to diversion and work with, you know, counselors and so on, they can avoid getting a record. That didn't exist when most of the people we deal with existed. So my belief is it's better today than it was. And so 10 years from now, we may see fewer of those people, you know, who need expungements. We don't tend to see them because most of our cases are people who reach out to us. And I think the mental health community recognizes the problem, and we've spoken to groups that have mental health representatives, but so far I think they've been slow in coming to us, although we have a case right now where someone has been able to go through mental health court but has one conviction that needs to be expunged, and we're working to get that one expunged.
And that's a perfect segue into, we put this word out there, expungement. Dean Sunny, what is expungement?
Okay, so expungement, I'll tell you what it isn't first. Expungement isn't destruction of all records of your criminal conviction. In most cases. In the marijuana situation, we believe that's what the Constitution says, and we request that all records be destroyed. And in certain kinds of arrest expungements, it's also destruction. The records do not exist. Okay. But for everybody else, the records are sealed or closed. So in the court system, records are kept at confidentiality levels. And so the public gets to see most records. And frankly, under new laws, the public is going to have even more access to see records, not old records necessarily, but newer records, because the CaseNet system, which has the records, is going to become much more available to the public than it currently is. So CaseNet, you can elevate the levels, and right now expungements are on level 5. And very, very few people can see those records. The general public cannot, and it depends on what law you're being expunged under. So law enforcement for some purposes can still see it. The courts for some purposes can still see it. Certain employers can see it. Certain licensing authorities can see it. And if you want to work with children or the elderly, they can see your whole record. But outside of that, most employers, no housing that I'm aware of is allowed to see those records. So it makes it a whole lot harder for people to find those records. And expungement in Missouri is a civil lawsuit. So we actually bring a civil case called an expungement case on behalf of the person that we're representing. And who are we suing? We're suing every agency that we believe, every government agency, has records of that case. Because what the person gets when they get an expungement is an order from the court that they can have a copy of. So if someone, you know, if some background company is using old records and they find out that they were refused a job or housing because of a record, they can bring that with them and say, it is an expunged record. And those generally are treated very, very differently. In other words, people understand that an expunged record means that that conviction shouldn't be deemed to exist. Okay, the law requires that we name in that lawsuit every agency that we want to be ordered to close the records. So it's very important, and that's what a lot of what our research does. We have a general idea who has them just from knowing what court prosecuted them and so on and when it occurred, but there are reasons that there are additional records that we will track down, that the person who's trying to do this on their own, they don't check the right boxes about who to serve. For example, even on the court's form for expungement, they list the Missouri State Highway Patrol Records Repository, which is where lots of the records are. And then they have, you know, the court, the prosecutor, the police, and a lot of people don't check any of them because they don't realize they have records. But we found a source of records, and I'm not going to say where it's from, but it's from a state agency that has all this information about people who have been under supervision, been convicted and been under supervision in Missouri. That it's so big that the person with an average computer has trouble downloading it, and if they can download it, they can't find things in it. And we now got some access to it and had our computer person work on it so that we can use it to check some background stuff on people as well. But we now list that agency as someone who needs to be ordered to close the records, and they do, and we check it, and we see that record has gone away.
Well, we don't check it. We list it, because it's not an option that they suggest.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So they have to actually write out the name of that agency where it says other. And we do it every single time. So, you know, there are a lot of things that people don't know about expungement and about the way it works, that but they think of it as it's going to help me get rid of my record, and they try to do it on their own. And we actually watch cases of pro se filings, and sometimes we contact people and ask them if they want help.
So let me ask this question, Sydney, and then we're going to go to break. In 2016, Missouri passed the Maine expungement law. What are the requirements for an individual to apply for expungement in Missouri?
So currently there are several requirements. One is that the offense is eligible. Not every offense is eligible. Most violent and sexual offenses are not eligible. Most drug and stealing related offenses are. And then the second requirement is you can only get one felony and two misdemeanors total expunged over your lifetime. And a lot of people, that they have more than that. And so an expungement for them really won't change the collateral consequences they're facing. Another requirement is that for felonies in the preceding 3 years from the time you file, you cannot have had any new convictions for misdemeanors or felonies. And there is that 3-year waiting period as well.
So that means you can't even get a parking ticket.
Okay. So the traffic, what Ellen or Dean Suni was saying that she has on her record for speeding, that misdemeanor, that would reset this waiting period clock. So if she was trying to get a felony expunged and then got that speeding ticket, it would reset that 3-year waiting period.
Well, it won't.
Not anymore. That's how it used to be.
It used to be that, and this was a killer for people who we deal with, that things like speeding, especially if you weren't speeding too far over, and red light and that kind of stuff, that didn't, you know, interrupt the period and make you have to start over again. But the driving without insurance, driving without a license, driving with a revoked license, they used to start that over again. And my students used to call those traffic crimes of poverty, because nobody does that because they want to break the law. They do it because they have to choose between food and housing and pay in their traffic ticket. And so we proposed in 2021, there was an effort. We actually drafted a bill and got some senators to support it and bring it for us. And they that bill equalized the traffic. So instead of just two sections of the traffic laws not breaking the, you know, not preventing the expungement, now virtually no traffic except intoxicated-related traffic will cause that 3-year or 1-year for a misdemeanor waiting period to have to start over again.
So we're going to take a short break. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI. This is Cowtown Conversation. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today we have Sydney Ragsdale. She's a Truman Fellow, and she's working with the Innocence Project, correct?
Did I get that? I was. Okay, now I'm working with the Clear My Record.
Okay, now you're working with the Clear My Record. And then we have Dean Ellen Suni, who is the...
I'm the co-director of the Clear My Record Project and the director and creator of the Expungement Clinic.
So stay tuned right back after this short break. We're back. This is Joseph Jackson hosting Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM KKFI. And our guests today are Dean Suni with the UMKC Law School and Sydney Ragsdale, who is with the Clear My Record, correct?
Yes, UMKC School of Law, Clear My Record Project. We're both.
So, Sydney, Does this expungement process work across the United States, or is this just in Missouri?
It varies state to state. So if you go a couple miles to the west here, into Kansas, expungement is a whole different world. There are no lifetime limits, way less limitations on which offenses are eligible. Most offenses in Kansas are eligible. The big ones like murder and rape are not, but most other offenses are. And there are no lifetime limits, and that is huge. I mean, people in Kansas are truly getting second chances over there. And, you know, go a couple miles over into Missouri, and it's not like that at all. It's one felony, and that's it.
So, Dean Sunny, we know the wheels of justice can grind and go slowly. Mm-hmm. How long does it take for an expungement case to go through the judicial system?
Actually, this is an area where it goes pretty quickly if you do things correctly. If you don't do things correctly, it can go pretty quickly because your case can get dismissed very quickly. But once an expungement is filed, it is supposed to be completed within 6 months, and it almost always is. So when we take on a client, by the time we actually sign them on as a client, we've already done the background check, and we can tell them we can expunge everything, or we can expunge this felony. The misdemeanor is too recent, but it shouldn't affect that, you know. And then once we file, we have to do what's called service, and that's part of what the court fee pays for. In Jackson County, the court, if someone is indigent, the court will do it for us without the person having to pay for the filing fee or the service. If they're not, then they can pay $10 in per agency served, and Jackson County will do that service, okay? Once we have evidence that everybody has been served, and the court has that evidence, and we file it, or they file it, you know, when the green cards from certified mail come back, then there's a 30-day waiting period. And within that waiting period, the prosecutor or any of the other defendants can object to the expungement if they believe that it shouldn't be granted. Okay? And if they don't object, then most courts require us to go to hearing. And in Jackson County, for example, they set the hearing, you know, a couple of days after the petition is filed. And they plan for, you know, that period of time plus some delays. And it used to be, you know, within 2.5 months. Now, you know, you're getting cases in December that are being filed, you know, at the beginning of September. So it's still, you know, in the 3-month range. In some jurisdictions, I had a case in St. Louis where they scheduled the hearing within 2 months. And, you know, then you have to make sure the service gets done quickly so everything is settled by then. But I would say, unless there's some problem within 4 months from the date you file, if you were eligible and we were correct about that, you're going to have your expungement in hand. And then because normally the judge listens to the person testify, and we ask them a series of questions that prove their eligibility. And then the judge signs the order, and they get the expungement order at that point. The one thing is that it orders that the records be closed within 30 days. So we tell people, wait 30 days before you try to do something with this, because, you know, the records still may be there until that time.
And if you're in St. Louis, you might want to wait longer and follow up with the court. I have a case that was granted 2 months ago, and it's still up there, and I've been calling and calling. So if anyone in St. Louis is listening, please close that case.
So, Sydney, how many successful expungements have you all done to date at this to this point?
I believe it's 32 at this point. Yeah.
So you gave 32 people a new lease on life just from getting that old animal, that old bear off their back.
Mm-hmm. And we have, I mean, we have a lot of cases pending, you know, that have already been filed, and a line of cases following those. You know, we're now in full swing. We had a backlog from an event we held a long time ago, and we just didn't have the staff to deal with it. So with Sydney's tremendous help and the work of the students, we cleared up that backlog, and everybody was notified either if they were eligible or not eligible. And now we're, you know, fully taking new cases. And, you know, we are quicker at doing them because we understand things better and we're better at teaching the students what they need to know.
And the courts are better too.
Yes, they are, because they understand it better now. And so we're actively taking new cases, and we would encourage people, and can I give out our
Yes.
Yeah. So if someone is interested in getting more, even more information about expungement, or from what they've heard, they think they're going to be eligible, go to our website, which is clearmyrecordmo.com. All one word. So clear my record with MO for Missouri, .org. And at the top right hand corner, that's where they click to do our intake. It says intake form. And we will get that. It's automatically sent to us. And we will begin the investigation as soon as we have a student we can assign it to.
So, Sydney, since you said you're the marijuana expert, how has the constitutional marijuana law change affected those who are currently incarcerated on a marijuana-related case or situation?
It's my hope that there aren't too many people still incarcerated on marijuana offenses, but I don't doubt that there are. Individuals who are currently incarcerated have the option to petition their sentencing court, which really will be their circuit court, because some people are incarcerated in jail and their sentencing court was a municipal court. Well, you can't petition municipal courts for expungement. They can't grant it, so they have to go to the circuit court. But individuals incarcerated can petition their circuit court, and if they fall into one of three categories, the court shall grant the expungement. And these three categories are very all-encompassing, which I think has taken some courts aback, and they don't fully believe maybe what they're reading. But the categories are any individual incarcerated who, category one, who would not have been guilty of an offense had sections 1 and 2 of Article 14 been in effect at the time of the offense. And so that's considering not just marijuana, the amount under marijuana legalization, which the amount that is completely legal, you know, no fine, nothing, is 3 ounces, and up to 6 ounces is a civil penalty for the first two times. It says section 1 and 2. And Section 1 is talking about medical marijuana, and that limit is much higher. So that's Category 1. Category 2 is an individual who would have been guilty of a lesser offense, which I think would be about anyone incarcerated on a marijuana offense. Now that this is legal, it's lesser. The third category is anyone incarcerated on a marijuana offense who pled guilty or was convicted of a misdemeanor Class D or Class E felony involving the possession of 3 pounds or less. And so that 3 pounds kind of, I'll be honest, I'm not exactly sure how it plays with the limit of 3 ounces. But I think what the real intent here behind this was to stop penalizing people for marijuana, to I mean, you know, maybe we don't make any amount legal, but penalizing people and taking their life away from them for something that many people think is less dangerous than alcohol, we're not doing that anymore. And that's what this amendment was really about.
I always said whenever the government figured out a way to make money off of recreational products, then they would become legal. That's what happened in Missouri. And now they're looking at it on a federal level because as they need more tax dollars, the state taxes marijuana, the county taxes marijuana, and the city taxes marijuana. So they can't get, I think it's almost a 30% tax. They can't get the tax dollars if they don't make it legal. And as municipalities, cities are looking for more revenue streams and income to come in, they're putting tax on your cell phone usage. They're getting the money off of gambling cuts, and they figure, well, we might as well go into the narcotics business and get that particular aspect also. Sydney, how does it impact those who may be on parole or probation?
So individuals on parole or probation were supposed to be automatically taken off probation or parole if they fell into one of those three categories I just described. Those three categories also apply to individuals on probation and parole. They were supposed to be taken off of probation or parole and have their record expunged on the effective date of this amendment, which was last year, December 8th, 2022. A couple days ago, I got an individual off of probation for marijuana. So it didn't happen in the timeline it was supposed to. And he had to pay fees, probation fees. And we couldn't get those back. That's really hard to do. But I have no doubt there are other people who are still on probation and parole for this. And people on probation and parole are being violated for using marijuana, which is a very questionable thing. That they say they're doing it because it's against federal law. But these are state agents who took oaths to uphold the Missouri Constitution, not federal law.
That sounds a little suspect at worst. Well, at best, because you're now trying to that's just an overreach, because you're not a federal agent, you're a state agent, and you're sworn to uphold the Missouri Constitution, not the federal Constitution. And it seems like it's a situation where they're basically just being mean to people and sending them back because they've got that power and that authority over that person until they get them off of the situation. It just doesn't work like that.
Well, and their justification is that conditions of probation are imposed on people. And one of the conditions that is imposed on just about everybody is not to violate any state, federal, or local law. And so it has nothing to do with marijuana. It has to do with that they violated the law. But it's certainly not within the spirit of what the constitutional amendment intended to happen.
Mm-hmm. So, Sydney, what about those who may have a felony marijuana offense? How's legalizing marijuana impact those who have a felony marijuana expense?
So the Constitution says within, not starting on, it says within 12 months, any felony marijuana offenses are to be expunged. All of them. If for individuals who are currently who have a sentence for a Class A, B, or C felony, they are to complete their sentence, and upon completion, those records are to be expunged. There are really no exceptions on amount or anything like that. There are exclusions on if the individual sold to a minor, drove under the influence, or the offense involved violence. That is it. It's a really, really big task, and in 12 months to find all of them. The misdemeanors arguably were easier to find, just in the way that the statutes are. It was readily more identifiable for those misdemeanors, which were due to be expunged on June 8th of this year. And I know there are a lot that still have not been expunged. felonies, it's December 8th of this year. After that, individuals are entitled to the expungement, and they're actually entitled to act as though they got the expungement, even if the court hasn't done it yet or given them notice. And that's written out in the Constitution.
Wow.
Although, I don't know if I would recommend it.
No.
but there is a constitutional right there. And another thing I want to talk about is municipal offenses. Right now, those are not being expunged at all. And I think the theory is that they're so minor they can't be hurting people. But that's not true. There is a lot of penalty associated with municipal marijuana offenses because individuals are fingerprinted for those, and they go into the nationwide fingerprint system, and that record comes up for them on state background checks, and they're being penalized. There are penalties, and I don't think the people of this state intended to exclude arguably the most minor offenses from being expunged.
So it seems like you are going to have a little bit more work to do to get things to come back to where they need to be so that the situation changes. As we close out, I got three last questions that everyone to get in. While marijuana is fully legal in the state of Missouri, and both of you can chime in, I was working on my house, and right across the street from Home Depot on Linwood, there's a big dispensary. I think it's Fresh Karma or something. And the day that they started selling, there were cars from both sides of the state line and everywhere else. So people come in Missouri, you get it. You can get it. You're supposed to take it home and consume it. You know, they sell everything. I've been told from gummies to everything else. So, but there were a lot of Kansas plates in there. So once you pick it up in Missouri and go across the state lines, they can get in trouble for that, correct?
Yes, they definitely can. Something you mentioned, the dispensaries are selling not just raw plant marijuana. They're selling gummies and THC oil and stuff. There are some courts in the state of Missouri that are interpreting the Constitution based on law that existed before the Constitution really isn't relevant to the interpretation of the Constitution. But they're interpreting it to not include THC as something that can be expunged. And so there are individuals who are incarcerated on probation, on parole, for a THC pen that they maybe got somewhere at a dispensary down the street. And, you know, if that's some court's interpretation, they have something really big that they have to deal with, which is a lot of dispensaries are selling this.
Yeah, it sounds like that's going to definitely be a situation. And another thing, many people may not think DWI, I'm driving under the influence of alcohol. And I've pulled up the stop signs, and you can smell the aroma coming out of the car. If you're driving and you're smoking, you are driving under the influence and can be arrested, correct?
Absolutely, yes.
So, people, you definitely need to think about that. Wait till you get home, where you're at, because the officer's going to sit and say, I smelled the aroma in the car. That's enough to give him probable cause. Yeah.
Well, I don't think anyone can smoke in your car because if you have a passenger in your car who's smoking, but you're not smoking and you have the windows up, you're gonna
get just as high as they are.
Yes, but I do think if you have a passenger who's eating gummies, that's different. That's not getting you high. But there is. In the Constitution, a rule that municipalities can pass laws making it illegal to have anyone smoking in your car. So even if it's a passenger, you could get in trouble for driving.
We've got to close out. Can you give the information for the law school where they can clear my record project and the number in case anybody has definitely needed this service or assistance?
Yeah, our website is www.clearmyrecordmo.org. There is an application in the top right corner, blue button says clinic intake. Click that, follow the prompts, and that's how you can apply to us for our services.
And one very important thing, we can only expunge convictions that occurred in Missouri. We can help you, help refer you to Kansas where they can do it, but we can only handle Missouri cases.
I want to thank Sydney Ragsdale and Dean Ellen Sunny for being our guest today. We're never in Cowtown Conversations without a community minute. Yesterday, I had a friend who was diagnosed with prostate cancer, but it was a level 6, so that means it's a blessing. Unlike Chad Boseman, the actor who played Black Panther, who, when they caught his prostate cancer, it was basically incurable. Folks, getting screened for prostate cancer is easy. There's no examination anymore, and it just requires a simple blood test. So you go in, they're going to do a PSA test on you. And this weekend, University of Kansas, KU, is doing a screening on Saturday. If you have not had a PSA test, now is the time to get it done. It's easy and it's going to save your life. Wives, ask your husbands. We as men don't go to the doctors often, but ask your husband to see if he's been to the doctor and had that PSA test done. Prostate cancer is one of the easiest cancers to cure if it's caught in time. That's why it's critical that you have that PSA blood work done. What it also does for you folks is it allows you to have that number from year to year so you know where your numbers are and if you're at risk for doing that. So this screening is for those from 40 to 85, and you can call 913-588-4719. Again, 913-588-4719. So for Cowtown Conversations, I've been your host, Joseph Jackson, saying have a great day, stay safe, and stay tuned to Signal to Noise.
FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, streaming online at www.kkfi.org.